Welcome to episode 152 of Sports Clicks and Politics. I don't know if you noticed, I figured out the audio setting that didn't give us the reverb on the intro. Hooray me.
Look at you.
I'm like a professional.
You're growing up so fast.
Again, welcome to 152. So far, error-free tech-wise of sure to go wrong here by the end of the show, but Sean Hannon here, joined as always by the charming and handsome Mr. Ben Husong.
Happy to be here.
We'll get to the specific late night part of your weekend, but how was your weekend?
I was still good. It was busy, but it was fun.
You made it through it, so yeah, all things considered.
Got too much going on. I was hoping to start doing some projects, and I just didn't have time this weekend, unfortunately. So a little disappointing from that standpoint and from a football standpoint. But, you know, life is good. No complaints.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I had a much less successful DraftKings weekend than last weekend, so not all that great for me either. So different but the same.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah,
sorry for your loss.
Yes, not that much. I made enough last week.
There you go.
I haven't solicited any DraftKings sponsorship yet. They should just
you probably should.
They should just sponsor our show,
obviously.
All right, well, before we get into some of the topics, I think we have a good selection of topics today, some overlap of some things that we've talked about in the past, and trying to shed some new light on some stuff or create some awareness on some things anyway that may happen in the near future here. But anyway, so please like the video, subscribe to the channel, share the video, and if you're listening to us on the podcast, please pull over now and leave us a 5-star rating review or whenever it's convenient for you. How's that?
I mean, you're still error-free, and we're almost 2 full minutes in.
That's impossible.
I'm telling you.
It only took 152 shows to figure out 3 minutes of success.
There's so many places to go with that.
I'm yeah, right, exactly.
I'm just going to let that slide.
All right. All right. Well, let's talk about the specific weekend, Mr. Husong.
All right.
Let's start with your Bills. Get it out of the table here. Last game of the slate, but the most freshest in our mind, I guess, here. Sure. And the most pertinent to our show notes here anyway. So give us the Bills Chiefs 101 lowdown recap of excellent game, though, but go ahead.
Of course. I mean, they always play excellent games, and it was there. I think that the Bills give them a lot of credit. Their defense is beyond depleted, and they're still going out, and that's a credit to Sean McDermott as a defensive coach. You're not going to stop these teams. It's just the NFL is not built for shutouts anymore. So Sean McDermott, the work he's done with the defense is absolutely incredible. It was too bad. We had a couple of drops on very long, beautiful passes by Josh Allen. So I kind of feel bad for Josh Allen in that regard.
Can I just piggyback on that one? You're getting a new running back, right? Like, I know Cook seems to be good, but he can't catch a ball. Like, I've watched him do that. I had him on my team once where I was like, if that dude catches the ball, it's a touchdown. And this is like the third time I've seen something very close to that. And he seems like he should have good hands, but maybe he doesn't.
I don't know.
Honestly. Did you know that I played Ty Montgomery in my lineup yesterday as a 1.9% owned player? It helped me pay off a little bit of some things.
Sure.
But
good value.
Yeah, I best case scenario / worst case scenario, depending on who you're looking at, Cook gets hurt or benched or fumbles, and then Montgomery gets extra work. But anyway, he seems just as explosive as Cook, and I haven't seen him drop that many balls. Like, I've seen Cook drop a lot of balls. Go ahead, finish your rant.
They always seem to be touchdown passes that he manages to drop. So Cook dropped a sure touchdown. Diggs dropped a 70-yard pass. Sheffield dropped a deep pass. I mean, it's just, you're looking at it like, guys, it's the playoffs. Like, this is the one we really need. Somebody's other than Josh Allen has to step up. And anybody, look, if you're going to tell me Josh Allen's not elite, I'm just going to, like, smile at you and not talk about football with you. The guy's playing at a level that's, I just feel bad for him. It's literally the only reason this team wins is Josh Allen takes it all on his back and is like, all right, come on, guys, we're going to go. Wide right hurt a lot. Obviously, that brought back some PTSD for Bills fans of my age.
And Nance has loved to bring it up.
Oh, that was
he
that
actually
was brutal.
Like was like probably had that like I'm sure he didn't have the video queued up where he could have just like said remember this and just drive it home. But yeah, he had that ready.
Oh yeah, that was in the holster. That was all set to go. I guess my overreaction, my hot take, if you will, is
listen to me.
I think the Bills need a need to retool some stuff. As much as I love Sean McDermott, Sean either empower an offensive coordinator to start trying to win by 30 or go get a new job. Because he's still trying to win games with defense on the field. And the strategy's not bad. Like, the plan last night, and this is on Josh Allen, was hold the ball until the very end, score a touchdown, don't give Patrick Mahomes time. And Josh Allen missed a wide-open Stephon Diggs running across the flat route underneath and tried to score the touchdown pass on that play. Unfortunately, got bumped as he was throwing, caused a misfire. The problem I have with it is, even if you got that in the touchdown, you left Patrick Mahomes with almost 2 full minutes. Hit the underneath route, eat up more time. So that was, it's not like Josh Allen played a perfect game. He did make some mistakes, but so did Patrick Mahomes. He overthrew two or three certain touchdown passes.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, just to add, the Chiefs defense is pretty good this year.
Very good.
Yeah, and their secondary is elite, maybe. So, I thought there was just a lot of really good players on the field, honestly, obviously with no real, dog in the fight. It looked like there was people making a lot of good plays. And there was people making plays on defense, even by just the offensive players were just making better plays last night. Like, I didn't think, you know, there was some open ball, like, you know, the only real miscue was the fumble, right? Hardman's fumble.
Yeah. Oh, that fake punt. What the hell was the fake punt?
I literally called it. I'm like, they're running a fake here. And I was like, to me, so like, no, I wasn't like, you know, making this publicly known, but it seemed like this was like, this seems like a place where you would do it, but I feel like it's not a great field position to do it at. And then boom, did it anyway. So,
I mean, and if this is the play call you came up with,
but do you think it was, so it made me think, or the way they commented on it made me think that they knew that there was an advantage in the line situation,
yes.
Like the way the lineup was. They're like, okay, well, we have an extra guy, so that should help us. But it was like 7 yards, right?
It was fourth and like seven, and they went for 1 yard. This is unbelievable. If you're going to make that call, you better get that right.
Yeah.
You can't be that far away. Like, DeMar Hamlin, here's the thing. If you want to go forward on fourth and eight, just leave Josh Allen on the field. That's all I ask. You got Josh Allen. He's been the entire key to all of the success this team has had this entire season.
Totally fair.
This guy is a unicorn. It's unbelievable what he is capable of doing. Like, they showed the stat at the beginning of the game. Every other quarterback in the NFL, when they're within 1 yard of the sideline, is 1 for 22 for like 5 yards. Josh Allen is 5 for 6 for like 85 yards. This guy does things that don't make sense. And you take him off the field, you put DeMar Hamlin on, give him the ball, and let him just go run into a line and get stopped. That made no sense to me. But my point on McDermott is, look, you're not adapting to the NFL of today. You're still trying to win with the defense and run and stop the run of old. When a couple years ago, when they were really having success, they were blowing teams out. I want to get back to that. I want to call Frank Reich. He's looking for a job. Let's bring him back. He's had some success with offenses.
Well, do you think that this guy, I mean, clearly they seem to click a little bit with the new guy, right?
I think Joe Brady's great, but I'm just saying at this point, my concern is I thought Sean McDermott was great, and he has been. I don't mean to speak ill of Sean McDermott. You have this generational talent at quarterback, and if you piss him away with good enough at coaching on offense and head coaching, it's going to be such a regret for a franchise. Like, you don't get guys like this very often.
I mean, it took the Denver Broncos like 20 years to get one for John Elway.
It did.
And they eventually got one.
They eventually got two, right? But my fear is you're doing this. And I don't mean to speak ill of Sean McDermott, because his defensive strategies, I don't think most people realize how injured the Bills defense actually is. They're on like their 5th and 6th cornerbacks are starting, and they literally brought A.J. Klein off of a family vacation to the Florida Keys to come back and play because they have so depleted at linebacker and secondary. So I give him all the credit in the world. But as a head coach, oh, my God, do we need to fall into a prevent defense in every two-minute drill? Oh, my God, do we have to have a defensive timeout every game? Can we never just save them for the offense? Like, why are we trying to win by a score? I don't care that we can run the ball and establish the run and everything else. You know what I want to see? I want to see us score 35 points, and if your defense gives up 33, it's still a win. Make these teams do these things that you have this capacity to, but he doesn't want to play football that way. And it's frustrating because, look, every rule is in that direction. Every single one. Every rule is meant to benefit the offense over the defense. You're fighting an uphill battle. Could it work? Yes. The plan last night could have worked. The problem with his game plans is there's no room for error. So if that plan works, it's a brilliant strategy to have the Bills score with less than 30 seconds to go to take the lead and keep the ball out of Mahomes' hand, and he's going to have one timeout or no timeouts to try to get a touchdown. But if anything goes wrong, you lose. If the plan is not perfectly executed, you lose, and there's no room for error. And if that's been the theme, as I can tell from his game plans, is if it works perfectly, it will work. But if anything goes wrong, it's a coin toss. So why not change the strategy for go win by 30? Don't take your foot off the gas the entire game. And then if your defense is tired, your defense is tired. Who cares?
In this coach's defense, I guess, like you just mentioned, they were all banged up. So like maybe they couldn't win by 30 this game. I mean, and they're playing a good team.
They're playing. I don't think they could have won this game by 30.
Oh, you don't think the running game would be better if Gabe Davis was on the field blocking, you know, like a –
I'm like just saying, maniac, like, right? When Gabe Davis is not on the field, Josh Allen throws zero interceptions. Like, there is a correlation at work here. I don't know that Gabe Davis is going to be back in a Bills uniform.
Yeah, I don't know that he's even a great player or great wide receiver, but he does a bunch of things that is missed, like that Shakir can't do or Sherfield can't do. Right.
He does some things very, very well. But little things like the Philadelphia interception, where I don't know enough about football to comment on this intelligently, but all the people that know football are all pretty much unanimous as, yes, you are taught, you go over this, every team, zero blitz, you go to the middle as a wide receiver, and you just go to the middle of the field and be wide open, and Josh Allen throws the ball, and it looks like a terrible pass because Gabe Davis went to the corner. Like, no, it's a zero blitz, you have to know what's going on and go in that direction. And something I don't think Allen threw like 12 interceptions or 10 interceptions. Something like 9 out of 10 were throws to Gabe Davis. Like, he always gets those interceptions.
He also probably throws more high risk. I mean, those deep balls are...
I don't care about those interceptions. Right. Like, all right, it's...
Well, I don't know how to do that, but you'd have to pair those off and tell me that the interception rate is whatever.
It's like 3rd and 8, and he decides to throw the ball 65 yards downfield, and it gets intercepted. Like, all right, whatever. It was worth a shot. I'd rather you do that than throw a 2-yard pass, and then we have to punt. I'd rather you throw the ball downfield and at least take a shot. So I don't hate that. Is it too many interceptions?
I mean, the window's not closed on the Bills.
Oh, God, no. No, not at all. But it gets more difficult from here, and I think they have to do something different because something is not working, and that's a problem. Like, you've got to make an adjustment to something. I don't know what that is. If Sean McDermott can, like, get out of his own way, and when Brian Daboll was there, it worked because Brian Daboll could stand up to Sean McDermott and be like, no, I'm doing it my way. Ken Dorsey couldn't. Joe Brady cannot. And I guess here's the ultimate thing of if you got rid of Sean McDermott, and I feel bad saying that because it's not like he deserves to get fired necessarily, but it's the NFL. Are you telling me you wouldn't rather have Jim Harbaugh? You wouldn't rather have one of these coaches that's currently available? And if Sean McDermott gets fired, he might get another head coaching job right away because he has done a very good job, but he's not getting a head coaching job on a high-level team.
All right, well, then he'll bring him to a high-level team.
He can bring him up there, and then you just got to get across that threshold, Sean, and the way to do that is...
It's so hard to win in the NFL.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
So it's hard for me, like, even, you know, it's actually a feat of credibility that the Bills lost 4 Super Bowls in a row, but nobody takes it that way.
Oh, it's it's one of the... This is going to sound absurd, and I'm a homer and everything else.
But I'm not a homer, and I'm going to agree with you.
The most impressive statistic in all of football, not unironically, like the idea that you somehow got back together, got back to the Super Bowl after losing it, and you got back a fourth time is unbelievable. Yeah. I don't know how they did it.
Yeah, right. As I can say, so like, you know, it's all relative to some degree. And the Chiefs, you know, we'll move on to the other games here in a second, but 6 straight AFC championships games for them too. They got a little mini AFC dynasty going.
Listen, they got a quarterback that's very comparable to coaches. Josh Allen. They have a coach that is light years
ahead. I think Allen is way better than Mahomes, actually.
I don't disagree with that, but I feel what like I
say,
homerish.
When I say better, I mean Josh Allen is the reason why Bills win games more than Patrick Mahomes is the reason why the Chiefs win games.
I agree with that. Yeah. I think if you put Josh Allen with Andy Reid and Steve Spagnuolo as a defensive coordinator, they would be in the exact same position.
Yeah, right, for sure.
If you put Patrick Mahomes on the Bills with this coaching, he would regress to below what Allen
probably
is. And I think that's
this is no knock on Mahomes. He's great, elite. So, but I think Allen is crazy for a white guy. Like, he can run 2 and pass 2 every game.
Right.
Like, every game, that's in the range of outcomes every effing game. He can run into and pass into, and I mean, it's something that only like a Lamar Jackson can actually right. really bring to the table. But I mean, I think Josh Allen is, you know, already basically cemented a Hall of Fame career at this point, and he hasn't won shit.
I know. I've never seen anything like Josh Allen. Like what he, and he'll run and people get frustrated. Like, oh, he's throwing across his body. Like,
I think Elway is a fair example. I do actually. Too. I mean, Elway ran a lot. He was a tank. Like, he didn't look like he was, you know, he's an athlete. He played baseball right. and whatever. So, and I think Allen is an athlete. Like, it's not like he's just a thrower, like a Joe Flacco, right? Like, right. Joe Flacco is an elite thrower of the football. Like, it's sick how far and how sick his spirals are. Like, it's crazy, yeah. Even at the age that he's at. And all quarterbacks can every once in a while do that. But you saw the arm that Allen had on that freaking bomb. It was like a 70-yard pass.
Into a 20-mile-an-hour
Yeah, like game. Craziness.
But it's unbelievable that you drop that in, and then your number one receiver, and I'm not trying to...
It was a tough catch, but, I mean, he makes that catch.
You're Stephon Diggs. Yeah, right. I don't want to hear that it was a tough catch. Sorry. Like, you need to come down with that ball.
And he kind of faded, petered out there at the end of the year. So, didn't really have much... kind of big play thing. So.
No, that hurt the team. I wish he would have hit him on the slot on that throw underneath after the 2-minute mark. Because yeah, I think that would have been the right play. Yeah. We didn't need to score right there. We needed to keep the ball and keep moving up the field. You need it. Because if you go ahead, now it became, if they were up 27-24. No, because it was down 3. Now you go up 4 and you give Patrick Mahomes the ball with a minute 56 left. That's not a great situation. Sorry, what you need to do is get close, is eat more time and trust yourself that with 2 minutes and 3 timeouts, you're going to get in the end zone. We didn't need the home run right there. Instead, hit Diggs underneath, let him run around, let him get inside the 10, and now the Chiefs are on their heels. So that was a mistake. However, and this is where I feel so bad for Josh Allen a lot of the times. So like, they don't lose with him on the field very often. They lose when he comes off. Like, all of a sudden, Tyler Bass missing that kick, I'm sorry. I know it's a windy night and everything else. That's a kick you got to make.
Yeah, that was a screwball. So like, he hit it wrong.
Right. And
or I'll leave it. I haven't heard anybody report on this yet. But wobbly balls. NFL's fixed. You throw in the wobbly ball. You got to get the right.
NFL's.
You got to get the Taylor Swift effect. Keep it in the playoffs.
Keep it going, baby.
So you know you've seen these trick golf balls, right, where you can putt it, but they don't go straight.
Yes.
You think the NFL has those for footballs where they can set it out to Tyler Bass to kick the wobble?
No, I don't think so. Come on. I think Tyler Bass just missed the kick.
Let's make this up. Let's make this a thing.
I mean,
it gives you an out.
I mean, I'm not looking for an out. They didn't make the plays. My kids are like, oh, this happened. And I was like, guys, don't blame refs. Don't blame anything else. The Bills had every chance to win this game, and they didn't get it done. You can't drop those passes in this game. Yeah. You can't have this game plan going. Like, there was so many. You can't do that punt. That fake punt and end up and miss that badly. Like, there is so many individual circumstances. And let me be clear. I don't think Sean McDermott coached a bad game. I thought he actually did very well last night. But it's been a season-long process of watching him constantly try to win by 3 points. That's what I found so maddening. All season long, it was the goal is to win by 3. The goal is to win with the defense on the field and just win by a possession. And to his credit, in his tenure as the head coach, the Bills have only lost by more than one score, I think, one time. Not counting the first year where they were kind of garbage. But after that, they just don't lose by more than one score. Every game is tight or they blow people away. I want to get back to the Bills of 2 years ago where the goal was, let's score 60. If the defense can shut them out, awesome. But the offense is going out to put 60 on the board no matter how long it takes.
All right, let's touch on the other games here, and then what do you think is going to happen in the two conference championship games? So any other, like, obviously Chiefs are the only road team that won. All the other three home teams won. Were you, I don't know, did you watch the other games?
Well, yeah, I mean, in and out. I wasn't glued to the TV.
So now that your beloved Bills are out, do you have a rooting interest other than the Chiefs?
I'm getting stuff done around my house. I'm done. Like, I'm not sitting around for
I mean, I guess the Lions is the... The sentimental pick,
I'll
if you will.
Lions.
I mean, they're a city that needs something to root for.
I have a good friend who's a Lions fan, and I have a good friend who's a 49ers fan. Okay. So either way, I'm cheering for one of those two teams from here on out. That's kind of where I'm at. But I will not.
Do you believe the conspiracy of the Ravens, San Francisco predetermined Super Bowl because the Super Bowl is purple and red colors?
No, I think they're setting everybody up to do a bait and switch because they really want Taylor Swift. So they're like, oh, everybody, it's fixed. 40. Oh, look, Chiefs got in.
Well, see, if the Vikings, if Kirk Cousins didn't get hurt, they could have made the complete opposite and done Chiefs and Vikings. And they'd be like, it's still purple and red.
I know. I love that idea, but
I like the wobbly ball idea way better.
I like that too. That's actually pretty awesome. But yeah,
I just made that up, by the way.
It's watching.
If like, that becomes a thing next year on the NFL, that there's a wobbly ball conspiracy, and I started that shit right here.
I love it.
Just remember that. Note this at home.
Is that what happened last week against Pittsburgh too, where he put the ball 40 yards left on a 30-yard kick?
No, I've seen that happen. Well, it could have been.
I don't know.
I mean, they probably needed the Bills. So.
The fan filming the kick. And it got hit. Like, it was the best of how hard he
I did not see that. That's
shanked
great,
that kick.
That's funny. All right, predictions? Other than you said you were preferring the winner of the NFC to come out there, whatever. Yeah. So, but who do you think's going to win the AFC here? Ravens, Chiefs? It's a 3-point line in favor of the Ravens.
I think the Ravens win.
Do you think it's a... they cover the spread, low scoring, like the over-under is 44 or 45, something like that. So low number. They are predicting a defensive battle here. I'm not sure what the weather is going to be like in the Baltimore area there. But
I think that the Ravens will have a much better offensive game plan than the Bills did, and they are a much more dangerous defense than the Bills were right now. Their defense is very good, and I don't know that the Chiefs are going to be able to outperform them. I'll give McDermott some relief. I'm not killing him. You're playing third and fourth string guys at five starting positions. It's a problem. I understand. The Ravens are not dealing with that particular problem. The Ravens have most of their starting defense still on the field. Obviously, the Chiefs are struggling to stop a running quarterback, and their linebacker, who they used as a spy, got hurt last night. I don't know how serious that injury is, but if you don't have that guy against Lamar Jackson, you're in a lot of trouble.
All right. Yeah, I think it's Ravens, too, and I think it's the Niners. I think the conspiracy theory guys are right, and it's Ravens-Niners.
I think it is, too. I think the Niners should win easily against the Lions, but I'm cheering for the Lions. Like, I want the Lions to win. It'd be a great story. You know, our kindred spirits in Detroit and Buffalo, because we've had to go through so much of the same stuff. But who knows?
Well, even though it was fully charged before the show, apparently the camera battery just died. So we're going to continue to talk here.
No video?
I don't know yet.
Fair enough.
There may become a video if I can fix it on the fly here. But I do have some audio things that we can listen to for sure. I got a little Julian Assange bit here I want to touch on here. So let's switch gears and we'll touch on... We actually touched on this, I don't know, a year or so ago. Seth Rich... You know who Seth Rich is?
I do.
So FBI defies court. This is from the Gateway Pundit, who is kind of, they interviewed. The reason I even kind of came to my attention, I was listening to an interview by the lawyer who is described here as the bulldog attorney who has been after the DOJ and FBI for years to get to the bottom of the Seth Rich murder. So if you don't know, Seth Rich, employed by the DNC, was employed with the DNC in 2016. Pretty well-known Bernie Sanders supporter, but worked for the DNC and was murdered in what the FBI is labeled a botched robbery.
Sure.
Even though he was the only person he was killed, his watch was still there.
Oh.
His phone.
Mm.
Wallet.
Nobody ever takes those a robbery.
Not during a robbery.
They take his shoes?
I don't think anything was missing,
actually. That's where the money is. Now I'm suspicious.
So botched is the key word there. Botched robbery.
What, did he put up a fight after he died? It seems like once you shot him, at least take his stuff.
Yeah. So anyway, the reason why this seems to be something that cannot be let known, I mean, I think this is kind of maybe the pillar, if not one of the main pillars of the whole Hillary Clinton, Russia did it, blah, blah, the whole thing to the Russian, like all of it stems from Russia stole the DNC emails and provided them to WikiLeaks, and Russia is the enemy of the government and whatever. So if in fact it was the DNC staffer who leaked the WikiLeaks, the DNC documents to WikiLeaks, then the Russia pillar is gone.
Sure.
And it clearly creates a who killed Seth Rich. You can't not say that. I could not believe that anyone would else would believe that they are unrelated. If, in fact, it turns out he is the person who released, who leaked the documents and then ends up shot with the, you know, shot in the back of the head, right? So,
as most robberies occur that way, is you run up behind somebody, blast them in the back of the head, and then don't take their stuff.
Yeah. And so, Ty Clevenger, lawyer here, has filed lawsuits and trying with Freedom of Information Act and with the FBI trying to get access to those documents.
Uh-huh.
The FBI asked for 66 years. Brought to you by Pfizer, I guess, but so
it's the best request ever.
So, but why, first of all, forget about the request for a second. Why would the FBI have Seth Rich's laptop if it's a botched robbery? Like, there's what is the FBI even, why do they have any interest in
said laptop?
Maybe that's
why it was botched, is because he didn't have his laptop on him. And therefore, they couldn't rob him. They were trying to rob the laptop. Like, they mistook him for Hunter Biden and were looking for some really good foot fetish stuff. No, I got nothing, man. I've tried to piece together
some
stuff.
Listen, this is what is bothersome, is because they're connecting the dots for us, right? Like, there is no problem in the fact that, what's going on over here? I don't need that. Yeah, I don't need any of those. Thank you, but no thank you. That's not the battery that ran out.
All right.
But appreciate it. So back to Seth Rich.
Yes.
I want to play the Julian Assange clip. So this is kind of brings it back to things that we've been talking about regarding the Julian Assange case. And I think this may be the number one reason why the CIA wanted to take him out. What
so
do you think?
There was more than one reason the CIA wanted to take him out.
I guess, but I think this might be at the top of the list. So let me see if I can play this audio. Here we have Julian Assange here. I could probably just do this at this point. And give us a bigger frame here since we're not in it. But anyway, so Julian Assange, this is, I think he's in the... At this point, he's in the Ecuadorian embassy when he makes this interview here.
Okay.
But let's play it here. And it's only a couple minutes, maybe even less than that. So here we go.
As a 27-year-old that works for the DNC, who was shot in the back, murdered. As a 27-year-old that works for the DNC, who was shot in the back, murdered.
What are you suggesting?
I'm suggesting that our sources take risks.
Consider that New Year's resolutions
We're not going to do that. So, clearly, Assange is intimating there that his sources sometimes taste risk, offering a $20,000 reward for this and mentions a DNC staffer being murdered. There's no ambiguity to me that he's clearly linking the two and just wouldn't do so directly for reasons that are obvious to me as well. So, if, in fact, we get the documents, and this is kind of where we're going here, is this Clevenger believes that there are going to be documents released that the judge is you know, the FBI asked for 66 years and the judge said no. So thankfully, not on Epstein's list, this judge, I guess. So, so if in fact we get some documents that actually show, and it doesn't have to show that Seth Murdoch was murdered at all, that doesn't have to be related, just that the, I mean, listen, if we get notification or documents that prove that Seth Rich was the leaker of the documents to WikiLeaks, it all, everything comes together instantaneously. And, you know, listen, I don't think anybody's ever going to be prosecuted for that, but like, that points directly to the Obama administration, who was in charge at the time, the Hillary Clinton campaign, who was running to take over at the time. They're all in cahoots on this. Like, this is the Democrat Party assassinating one of their staffers to basically keep their internal agenda a secret. And it's kind of terrifying.
Sounds like a vast right-wing conspiracy, all right?
It's a conspiracy for effing sure.
All right, listen, let's just put all our cards on the table here. You've obviously lost your mind, because it makes way more sense that this 27-year-old DNC staffer, Bernie Sanders supporter, would never have wanted to shed light on the fact that the Democrat National Committee basically thwarted his preferred candidate's entire campaign and stabbed him in the back repeatedly, all right? So he would have just gone along with that. And then people get shot in Washington, D.C. all the time, all right? So if Seth Rich just out walking around, look at this dude. Clearly this guy has money, all right? If I'm getting ready to, like, armed rob somebody, this guy's high on the list. He doesn't look big, so I don't think he can fight. And I got a gun. So obviously I'm going to run up behind him. I'm not going to be like, hey, put your hands up, or, like, stand far away and be like, give me your wallet. I'm probably just going to run up, shoot him in the back of the head, and then when he falls down, I'm going to be like, you know what? I went too far. I got to get the hell out of here, like, right now. So I don't need his money. I don't need his shoes. I don't need his watch. I'm sure it wasn't that nice. This guy looks like a Timex guy through and through. All right, maybe even a Swatch, for being totally honest. So no money in that. And then that's way more plausible, all right, that this just guy happened to be that way. That's way more plausible than the notion that the guy who leaked the emails giving up the Democrat National Committee's internal strife, collusion, corruption, and crimes was then murdered for doing so and covered up. And the fact that the FBI denied having his file for all those years doesn't mean anything. Like, they do that all the time. That's basically their job. And the fact that they want 66 years just to release these files, totally normal.
Hashtag abolish the FBI. I mean, can we be done with this? I mean, what are we doing?
It's the best story ever. All right, let me just understand.
I mean, the FBI is clearly an enforcement arm of the DNC, which is a rogue criminal syndicate. Like, it is, they are a bunch of criminals running the world in certain spots.
Yep.
And probably all end up on Epstein's list too. So
this is just it's such a comical, what you're like, again, I think in terms of, you know, if we're not all wiped out in like some disaster event, but in 100 years, people are reading about today's American society, and like, this is the anecdote of that comes up. And then you read in the book, like, there's no way people believed this. This is too stupid. Like, no, this is exactly what the government said. Like, we read about the stuff in Soviet Russia, how all the political opponents die. And you're like, was everybody just okay with that? Why? And now I'm watching this and I'm going, oh, that's how it happens. Yeah. Sure. Sure, because everybody will just regurgitate the talking point and be like, no, the FBI is not corrupt. Like, right. Neither were the secret police in Russia or China. They were just doing their patriotic duty. Yeah. Checks out.
Yeah, the world's effed.
Bro, I'm just trying to stay off list at this point, all right? Like, I'm not trying to have...
I mean, we're on list.
I'm not trying to get robbed in the middle of the night and have that shit go wrong, all right? I'm just trying to stay on the up and up here.
Well, welcome back, viewers. If you know, I replaced the battery in the camera. Luckily, I have two cameras.
Smart.
I mean, we never used the second one. It just sits over here in a box, but the battery is just out, so I flipped it.
I knew all of these things, obviously.
So welcome back. And give us a like for... Did I didn't get the tech part right for, like, what, we got, like, 11 minutes? That's a record,
it.
I think.
You salvaged it, though. That's all that matters.
We got full green up there on the battery right now.
Give it 8 minutes.
Yeah. All right. So I don't know. I want these documents to come out. So obviously. I guess my point is I wanted to tease everybody that when these documents come out, we're going to talk about this again and that everybody should be talking about this because this is literally the pillar of the whole nonsense that we lived through for 4 years.
This is insanity. There's no better way to explain this.
Also terrifying.
Yeah, the idea that
this kid is dead because we were being ruled by criminals.
The idea that you and I are the conspiracy theorists and that the official verge is like the official version is what we're just told to believe, and that's what's logic. So the logic is this was a botched robbery where they didn't take anything from this kid, and the conspiracy theory is they had incentive, they had opportunity, they had motive, and the guy who got the documents has already intimated that, it was a 27-year-old who got shot. That was my source. And you're like, oh, like this 27-year-old got shot? They're like, conspiracy theorist. Okay. And the FBI turns and is like, we don't have any Seth Rich stuff, and God bless this guy, Ty
Clevenger.
Thank you. Going after him. And then finally they're like, all right, we lied. We do have it. Like, well, let me get it. There's no good reason. It was a botched robbery. Let me see his laptop. That's a foil. There's no means for you to hold on to this. And they go, fine, you're right. We'll comply. The deadline comes and they come back and be like, we changed our mind. The judge goes, what? They're like, all right, well, we'll send it. But we just need like 66 years to release all the data. So we'll just release it a little bit at a time. That's reasonable. And I'm the conspiracy theorist who's going, this doesn't add up. This is nonsense.
Yeah.
This is crazy. Why do you need 66 years to turn over a laptop?
For a botched robbery.
For a botched robbery where the laptop wasn't stolen. Somebody help me out here. Nah, it's probably all in the up and up. This is totally legitimate. Definitely not going to Washington, D.C. anytime soon.
No. All right. Speaking of conspiracy theories.
Oh, boy.
Lab leak confirmed, Mr. Huesong. Lab leak confirmed. So, again, I'm not going to get into all the specifics here, but this doctor here, Brutel.
Yeah.
And so he submitted a paper, a preprint or whatever, basically talking about I'm not going to be trying to use the right technical terms here, but there was basically a noticeable, change, I'll say mutation, but if it wasn't a mutation, it was a scientific change where they could notice that the pattern of this change was very consistent and standard, and in nature it doesn't usually happen this way. And so they're like, okay, this seems weird that this all happened in a, evenly spaced kind of way, and it turns out that
that's the exact for human infection.
That's actually the exact process that Wuhan was, that the whole Eco Alliance was trying that put a funding out for. So the exact, it's literally what everybody is calling here the smoking gun. I think it's long been widely accepted that this was probably where it was highly probable is probably the right word. But it kind of coincided in the same week where Fauci testified in front of Congress. And basically, I think he basically said, I don't recall 170 something times. So it's weird. When you get old, you lose your memory.
Suddenly, when you get out of government, you lose your memory. This seems to be the closer occurrence. So, all right. In 2022, they went through and they were looking at the genome sequence, all right, of the SARS-CoV-2 virus. And some very smart people, much smarter than you and I, went, oh, this is really weird. Because this entire sequencing is optimal for human infection. And if you were going to create one to intentionally infect humans, this is exactly what you would do. Now, that doesn't mean it can't happen in nature. That doesn't mean, because obviously viruses evolve and that can happen in the same way that viruses are trying to evolve for maximum efficiency, same as any other virus or biological being. So, okay, fine. And, even the skeptical people that, obviously you and I were looking at that point going, well, this obviously makes the most sense. There's no, the odds that this is now natural occurring is less than 1%. It's, you got to believe so many things in order to get there.
A pangolin mating with a bat.
800 miles away from where the lab was, right? And where the first occurrence
was. Wasn't there some dogs in there? What were they? Something dogs? There were something dogs.
Something dogs.
Yeah.
So,
we got the whole zoo family.
Now, the one guy, Richard Ebright.
Yeah.
He's the one Rutgers. Who said,
I'm
going to quote him. The match between the evidence provided by the genome sequence and the evidence provided by the FOIA release is remarkable and elevates the evidence provided by the genome sequence from the level of, quote, noteworthy to the level of, quote, smoking gun. So what this basically means, and I'm going to butcher this a little bit, is a little oversimplified, but, you know, bear with me. They went through this FOIA request and found that the EcoHealth Alliance and the Wuhan Lab had applied for funding to create the exact sequence that SARS-CoV-2 turned out to be. They literally went and I can't get into the weeds with you because I'll be the first one to tell you I don't understand it well enough, but my understanding is it's such a specific sequence that they went through and requested it. That's exactly what came out as SARS-CoV-2. So now the idea of natural spillover is laughable. It's not only did it happen to be the optimal one for that virus, is it the optimal furin cleavage site and all this other very scientific words, they applied for funding to study what happens when you do the furin cleavage site right here in all the exact same BHP denotes or whatever the hell else. They applied to create this exact virus in this exact lab. The virus then leaked from this exact lab, and they came out and were like, pangolins, bro, bats. And again,
conspiracy theorists.
And again, the lab was 800 miles away from where they said, where the bats lived. All right? It's the equivalent of an outbreak happening in Syracuse, New York, and being like, what caused this? Be like, it was bats in South Carolina. And then somebody ate one.
F in Myrtle Beach.
Unbelievable to me. So here's the bigger concern, though. All right, this is what people actually should be taking away from this, in my humble opinion. This ends the debate on everybody was trying their best. Bullshit. This was in their control. They knew this exact information 3 years ago. They knew that this lab had gone and done this exact sequencing. So every single government official, every single doctor who worked for the U.S. government, Anthony Fauci, Scarf Lady, everybody on down the line who came out and said, well, we really think that the lab leak's unlikely, lied to your face. There was zero reason for them to believe it. They had access to this information, saw that we had funded this exact type of research in this exact lab, and that SARS-CoV-2 followed that exact sequence, and they lied. This wasn't an honest mistake. You can't even claim this was an honest mistake. If you tell me this was an honest mistake, I'm going to laugh you out of the conversation. It's such an insane stance to take that if that is your inclination, you are in a cult. All right, I don't have better news for you. You belong in a cult if you still buy into this, because this is a smoking gun that not only did SARS-CoV-2 come from a lab and not a natural occurrence between a bat mating with a pangolin? I don't care.
Pangolin, yeah.
Pangolin, thank you. That instead it was that the government not only knew that that was very unlikely to begin with, they knew they had the sequence. They knew what was in there and they tried to not release it. Guys, this is a lie. This is the big takeaway. It's not like, oh, well, that settles the lab debate. No, that settles the lab debate, and it settles the who was being honest debate, and it ain't them.
Yeah, so I shared your aforementioned Richard H. Ebright, professor from Rutgers, I believe, with a hashtag arrest Fauci. I only say that because here he is here liking that along with this criminal over here, Ben Husong. What a criminal.
Yeah.
Look at these two.
Yeah.
Husong and Ebright. Nice firm. Oh, so, God. Just another thing, and I have another thing. We're lined up for another thing. Another thing and another thing. It seems like it fucking never ends with another thing. But anyway, like, we're living in a completely controlled, like, environment right now.
Yes.
And, well, they're clearly trying to... I mean, we were probably once really controlled, and they probably had everything kind of just running along smoothly, whatever, and I'm not sure, you know, what broke. Maybe it was the Epstein investigation, seriously. But there's clearly been a break in that, at least their perception of the control that they have, and now they're just trying to tighten and fill all the holes. And Seth Rich is a prime example of what they're doing. Julian Assange is a prime example of covering up their asses. this whole
Fauci, coming in front of Congress and saying, I don't recall or I don't remember over 100 times in response to questions about the COVID-19 response, should at least set off an alarm bell for you. And if you ever shared that little picture of Anthony Fauci in black and white and gave the little hashtag, I stand with Dr. Fauci, you should be at least a little embarrassed. A little bit. Because, again, it's the same thing of the idea that the 6 feet of social distancing, where he will now admit, yeah, I have no idea where that came from. Oh, that you remember. You remember that that was nonsense. And, again, you know, these weird conspiracy theorists with podcasts were pointing out this is completely unsubstantiated in any research. There is no scientific study being done to reflect 6 feet of social distancing would have any impact. And we got told that we were science deniers and we got laughed out. Now, hey, here's your boy. Your boy came out and like, yeah. That just sort of appeared and we ran with it. Like, and again, it's one thing to take that at face value, but go one step further with it. You are in charge of the country's and by and large the world's response to this generational pandemic that you also approved of, because let's not forget who was doing most of the funding approval at that point. It was that guy. So you looked at it. You know full well you funded this thing. You know full well it was created in the lab. You lied left, right, and center to, I don't know, cover up for the fact that you were doing gain-of-function research illegally. Well, I'm sorry, legal gray area, at least unethically. He wasn't supposed to be doing it, so he sent it to China and funded it and Ukraine, but that's neither here nor there. So now you come out and be like, all right, so somebody came up to you and said 6 feet of social distancing. And your first response, if you, like, just put yourself in Anthony Fauci's shoes, you're in charge. And somebody says that. Now, you've been an infectious disease doctor for 40 years. You've been around medicine and all around all this. You're supposed to be the leading expert on all things virology and infectious disease. And somebody says, if we just stay 6 feet apart, that'll lessen the spread. And your first reaction is not, where are you getting that? And you're like, this study from 1904 about a guy who's playing poker. And then you look at the staffer and like, clean out your desk. You are fired. Go away. No, instead you turn and you tell everybody to do that. Like, you make that a part of your recommendations. Like, that is where you cannot reasonably conclude that Anthony Fauci was giving this his best effort and just trying to keep people safe. He had a different agenda. Follow the incentives, I'll show you the outcome. Show me the incentives, I'll show you the outcome. Sorry. If you follow the incentives become crystal clear. The man was not looking out for anybody. He was covering up for his own malfeasance, his own, let's go, best case scenario, incompetence, worst case scenario, intentional malfeasance. So at least he got rich. He got those patents down through the NIAID, NAIDA, I don't know, whatever
it is. NAIAD, yeah.
NIAID, yeah. So, guys, this is indisputable at this point. I don't understand. Nobody wants to talk about it anymore. That's my favorite part. Everybody just wants to move on now. Like, mistakes were made. Like, so when this happens again next year, are you at least going to be open to the prospect that since it's all the same people in charge, they're probably going to lie to us again? No, we'll see what the government says then. Like, oh, God, help me.
Yeah. Craziness. All right. Well,
sorry.
Let's talk to some, let's, you know, pick it up a pace here. Let's talk January 6th, pipe bombs, Mr. Huesong. Can I... They just keep coming. The hits just keep on coming. I feel like Casey Kasem of conspiracy theories. I don't know.
The Casey Kasem of conspiracy
theories. Of spoiler theories. Alerts.
You could, but, do better. You could do worse than being the Casey Kasem of conspiracy theories. I mean, that's a good title.
Yeah. I got a future. FBI and Secret Service are covering up their role in alleged January 6th pipe bomb plot. Pipe bomb in quotes. Appropriately here.
Plot should be in quotes.
That's fair, too. I guess there was a plot, but, you know, just a misdirected one. But so this new evidence that they have in the headline here is video evidence that was Thomas Massey, my boy down in Kentucky.
Sassy with Massey.
Sassy. Found videotape evidence. Now, let's flash back a little bit. So we covered the pipe bomb kind of craziness a little bit more Revolver News, and we were making fun of the like one point, like there was some crazy like frame rate that was like from like 1981,
right,
where the DNC's security cameras were in this frame rate where, again, that is doesn't exist, but it was so bad that you could not make out the person who was there. And the since there was only one person there and they know exactly what time that person there, when they tried to go look for the phone, yeah, the geo-tracking stuff in the phone, whoops, corrupted data. Just, I mean, cameras went out, security guards were sleeping, corrupted data, grainy footage from the DNC. Lo and behold, we get not grainy footage on January 6th of this. So it turns out, and it took a while for this to actually become knowledge, that Kamala Harris was hanging out at the DNC during January 6th. And so this pipe bomb, quote unquote pipe bomb, was planted in plain sight. Like, there's pictures of it, and you're like, and it's got a big, huge, like, clock on it, like this big.
It's like a Looney Tunes bomb.
Yeah, right. Almost like Coyote made it, right? It's like Acme written across the back of it. So this bomb, quote unquote bomb, is sitting underneath a park bench. Just, you know, like, no one's ever going to notice that thing.
Never.
Outside of the DNC, and there's a Capitol Police and what turns out to be a Secret Service detail truck, like 12 feet from the pipe bomb. Like, they're in the driveway. There's like a grassy little area, and then there's the bench and a pipe bomb, like all within like 12 feet of each other. So you don't know who this guy is, because the FBI is great at doing investigations, apparently. The guy who's like, hey, there's a pipe bomb over here, that guy disappears. Nobody knows who that is. Admittedly, I mean, Chris Ray's like, yeah, we don't know who that is. So the guy who alerted them, they didn't, it's just, you know, should be a number one. Oh, it was, actually wasn't Chris Ray. It was D'Antono, the Whitmer kidnapping plot orchestrator guy who turned up running the January 6th plot investigation. Weird.
Brilliant.
So this guy was like, yeah, well, we shouldn't be think about conspiracy theory with the corrupted data. That was his quote, too, on that part. And then admitted, yeah, we probably should have investigated the guy who notified the police and Secret Service of the bomb, since they are typically we remove them as the first primary suspect first. Like, that's the first order of business.
Usually.
And so the video shows this guy walking up to the marked car, being like, hey, there's a bomb over here. We don't know exactly what he said, because they didn't interview the guy.
So
and
then,
nobody...
Wait. My memory's a little hazy
here.
So naturally, when he went over to tell the police officers that there was a pipe bomb in open public with a giant alarm clock timer on,
yeah,
they sprang into action.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, they sprang, like,
they jumped
stood
out of the car.
And stood there for like 20 minutes.
Just next to the bomb?
Literally looked disinterested. They were like, oh, shit. Yeah. To your point, no, none of that happened. This is the, when they say new evidence suggests, this is the evidence. They're like, why didn't you actually react when the vice president-elect is in the building with the pipe bomb? You're there to protect her. Like, at least that is a catastrophic failure of security, at the least, right? I mean, like, oh, shit, we forgot to look under the bench for the pipe bomb with the vice president-elect in the building. Like, we didn't, you know. This, it doesn't even make sense. Like, it's just as absurd as the Seth Rich stuff.
It's always in the last place you'll think to look.
Again, it's soul crushing in some ways, but you just have to laugh at it, or you're going to beat your head against the wall forever. But this is,
it's hilarious.
The three stories that we just covered in a row here are so, I mean, it should infuriate everybody if they, I don't know how to get people to understand what's actually happening.
Listen, here's my summation. This is my current working hypothesis that I'm pretty sure is right. These people hate you and think so little of you, they're basically phoning in all of their explanations at this point. Like, whatever. Just say it was a robbery gone wrong. Like, do you think that maybe we should take his wallet or anything then? Like, oh no, because we want some people to know that it wasn't that. But the sheep will just believe whatever. So, botched robbery, shoot him in the back of the head, and then leave all his stuff. Like, oh, okay. Anthony Fauci, like, hey, what's this SARS-CoV-2 sequence? And then he looks at it and goes, think I've seen this before.
Weird.
Let's go through it. Let's just make sure that we didn't fund any of this, right? Let's step one. Let's just see what our own culpability might be. Ah, crap. That's an exact match. All right, well, that's not great news. Sir, what should we do about it? Bury it. Just don't let anybody know, and then just tell everybody that this is actually a natural occurrence, and thank God we were doing this type of research to prepare, so we are once again the white knights that came to salvage the day. Like, are you sure, sir? Isn't that going to become obvious when this inevitably has to be released? Like, that'll be 4 years from now. Nobody will care. We'll just make them exhausted. Screw them.
Okay, here's the picture of the pipe bomb. You can see, like, it is not hidden. Like, on purpose.
It's amazing.
It's clearly meant to be found. Like if you were planting a pipe bomb, you're putting it in the bush, right? I mean, duh. Like the 1 foot next to it, like you're just like, oh shit, and just dropped it and ran. Like no, that was purposely placed there to be found.
I didn't think about that side of it before, but you're right.
What are you doing?
I was having
That's the worst bomb-planting individual in the history.
Listen, I was struggling with the idea of, like, why would you put it on a park bench if you're trying to blow something up? Nobody sits on a park bench outside of DNC. That, and then, but your point is way better of, wouldn't you just put it in the bush?
Yeah. Yes is the answer. You would put it in the bush. What are we doing?
Not putting the pipe in the bush.
No. No, because it's meant to be found to be the distraction for the Capitol Police ahead of the riots. That's the reason. Like, it's not even, like, it makes so much sense that I don't understand how anybody can think otherwise.
Can I tell you what I'm so excited for already? At some point, we're going to give video of the pipe bomb at the RNC headquarters that was simultaneously found. And I am so excited to see how that one was planted. Because I hope to God it's even worse. I hope they put it, like, on a garbage can. Like, I want it to be that crazy. That's all I'm hoping for. Yeah. They found the Republican one first, right?
I don't remember the order.
I thought they found that one.
It could have been.
But they found one at, like, 1256 and one at 1258 and then breached the Capitol at 102. Like,
yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, weird.
What a weird turn of events. And then you find out this. Like, all right, so just... This is going to be a little hazy, and I apologize, but I'm about 98% sure I've got this timeline more or less right. They found the RNC bomb, like 5 minutes later, like 3 minutes later, something real close. They find the DNC bomb. Capitol Police then have to get called away from the protest or riot, depending. At that point, I think everybody would agree it was a protest and not a riot. They hadn't breached anything yet, so they were protesting. So then, as at least some of the Capitol Police get called away, all of a sudden, at that exact moment in time, fortuitously enough, these ardent Trump supporters decide, now we're going to breach the Capitol. Because don't forget, it wasn't just a matter of interfering or making their voices heard. They were trying to overthrow the government. Don't ever forget that, because that's important. Otherwise, it's not an insurrection. You have to be trying to topple the government. So these unarmed Trump supporters went in to overthrow the government without a single gun. I'm sorry, like one dude had a gun, so he was apparently the muscle of the entire organization. So that happened at like 1:04. I mean, it was all within about a 10-minute window of time where if you were planning something.
Yeah, here, so it has, this is political, so take that with a grain of salt.
Sure.
Quick Google search here. Well, actually, DuckDuckGo search. Sorry, I don't want to, whatever. But Capitol Police began investigating the pipe bomb at 1:07 p.m. This is the DNC pipe bomb. According to an Office Capitol timeline of events, the timeline says Capitol Police and the Secret Service evacuated an unnamed protectee, which turns out to be Kamala Harris, at approximately, at 1:14 p.m., 7 minutes later. DNC bomb was neutralized at 4:36 p.m. RNC was neutralized at 3:33 p.m. That neutralized, so they were discovered earlier, yes. just as you suggested earlier. That took them a few hours to figure out that it was a kitchen timer strapped to, you know, some snakes fireworks. So, I don't know.
Yes, you do. You do know.
I know.
This is crazy.
But I don't know how. Listen, as we've said this so many times on the show, and this is, I promise you, not in an attempt to make any, like, talk down at anybody or whatever, but, like, but how would you get here if it wasn't just you sitting next to me for the last 4 years and me just being like, hey, read this article, and then being like, oh, yeah, I'm going to go follow up on this, and then figuring out shit on your own, being like, oh, shit, the whole thing's broken, and realizing it. I mean, like I said, we've had the conversations, you would have just laughed at me 4 years ago. You're like, okay, dude, whatever. And you would have just, you would have been polite about it, I'm sure. But in your head, you're like, this dude's a wacko. And I don't know, how do you become a wacko? But now here you are, wacko.
Full on.
Right. And so, but how do you can't just unload on a newbie, right? Like, you'd be like, oh, you think Biden's good? Where do you start? I mean, like, where do you start to
undo
get to the point where we're at now, where you're like, okay, clearly you can, and now that you see it, you can't unsee it, you're just like, whatever. So there is a tipping point for anybody who's like, okay, they get enough information, they're like, okay, like, if you have a working brain, you're gonna figure some shit out. That, like, I mean, listen, I've
You've been at this a long time.
For sure. I'm old and, you know, like I said, I've been down the rabbit hole since like 2006, 2008. So like it's been a while.
So here's, I think this is where my own path was much different than most. As you and I started talking about this at the same time as the Epstein suicide was happening and it was like,
oh, there were real stuff happening.
Wait a minute. Like,
right.
And I was skeptical at that point. Now, then I read the Afghanistan papers. I got into some other stuff simultaneously where my radar was all of a sudden, it was on my radar. My bullshit detector was going off like something's off.
Right. And let me just have it real quickly and I'll let you go. Because I'm convinced that I can't convince anybody else of anything, right? Like, I don't think I, like, everybody has to realize something on their own. There's going to be some combination of information that's going to resonate with that person different than that resonates with me, resonates with the other, whatever. Everybody's going to find their own path. I just don't know how, like, there's so many ways you could go.
Yeah.
Like, where he's like, start here.
So,
but go ahead.
Yeah. A man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. Like, you can't convince somebody who doesn't want to believe it. They don't want to see it. So mine was, once we started down that road, the first thing I did, and I would suggest this to everybody, is all of the media organizations, government officials, government mouthpieces that have done nothing but lie to you, stop listening to them at all. I don't watch Fox News. I don't watch MSNBC. I don't watch CNN. I don't watch them. I don't read them. I don't listen to them, because all it is, I wait until I find out what's going on, and then I compare it to what they're saying. And it becomes like a laughable exercise. But don't start there, because wherever you start is going to frame the issue for you. So what it turned into me was I started seeking out other sources of information. I started looking at it. Well, look, I can handle somebody getting it wrong. I can. Like, especially if you're in this world, people are going to get stuff wrong. That's fine. As long as they own it afterwards and they can
come through. There are massive influencers who are purposely trying to misdirect you. So if you get shit wrong, I totally get it.
I get on board.
Yeah.
But own it. Don't tell me that you weren't really wrong and then double down on the cover-up. And so for me, it was, as I started looking into more of the alternative sources of information, it became very clear to me what was being said. And you got to have some baseline values to operate off of. I'm a pretty avid 1A guy, almost an absolutist. Like, I'm pretty close to an absolutist when it comes to 1A. I'm not. I know there's some things we don't want. I get that. But I'm teetering on the edge of that. So the idea that you have the, you know, fourth or fifth most watched and highly regarded legacy media corporation refusing to air a speech by a former president and current nominee for president because there's consequences to us as a news organization for airing false things. Nope. That's not true. Sorry, that's not the real reason, and you know it's not the real reason if you were being honest. Like, if Joe Biden lost and then somehow didn't die and ran again in 4 years, and Fox News was like, we're not airing his speeches, you'd be outraged. So we have to operate off some baseline value of, no, let's let all the information out. And then it became kind of laughable listening to these people try to justify things like, well, we need 66 years to release the Seth Rich tape. We need 70 years to release the data that we collected over the last 18 months from Pfizer about all the pretrial stuff that is there. And this is where I had people ask me, like, where do you get your news sources from? Like, look, it almost doesn't matter where you get it from. What matters is wherever you get it from always includes links to the actual study, to the actual event. Go to it. Go watch the video for yourself. Go read. I read more scientific studies in 2020 than I've ever have in my entire life.
I know, but you have a mask fetish.
Something. No, I have a bullshit detector that I was like, this doesn't make sense, and I can't let it go once something doesn't make sense. I need things to line up. Seth Rich being murdered for releasing emails to ensure that he never goes out to verify that he was the one who released the emails and the Russians had nothing to do with it. If you're the DNC, of course you need to whack that guy. You base your entire election strategy on the idea that Russia interfered with the election and then put a sitting president under investigation for 2.5 years on that nonsense. So of course you need to whack that guy. You can't let that guy live. The incentive lines up. Shooting somebody in the back of the head to rob them and then not taking anything doesn't line up. There's no incentive that matches. And if that makes sense to you, you got to rethink. You got to step back. And that's what I think people aren't doing. So no, nobody's just going to buy in immediately. But the idea is, step one, and I can't emphasize this enough, stop believing the people who have done nothing but lie to you for decades.
Yeah, I wish... I mean, I think you're right in the sense that the media, getting past the media barrier is a, you know, it's a veil. It literally is a veil where you're like, they only allow you to understand the superficial amount of anything, really. There's no deep dives, whatever. Like, you have to, and listen, maybe people's attention spans aren't in for that, and they're not going to go listen to 3 hours of Joe Rogan talk to Peter McCullough or whatever. I get it. Like, most people don't have the time to do that.
Sure,
and
they do, but they'd rather watch The Bachelor.
Sure, but that's only, I guess sometimes they're 3 hours, unfortunately. So, but yeah, your point's taken. And I think the reason why I was, at least my BS detector for COVID was up early, is because of the exact reason you said. I had a bunch of news people who I had disconnected from the news in 2012, cold turkey, right, after the Ron Paul, the second thing. I literally stopped watching the news other than about 35 seconds to a minute on election day in 2016 when I had to go look at Rachel Maddow's face when Donald Trump won.
Like, 2 straight hours on that day. That was my favorite day in all of electoral
politics. So I broke my own personal rule for self-satisfaction there, but I wasn't there trying to get news. I was literally just trying to laugh. So
that poor bastard on CNN where they're like, it's not really over, right? And he's looking at the map like, maybe if every person in Madison votes.
So let's spin this into to the election here, and we'll roll this over here. And if you haven't already done so, please like the video, share the video, subscribe to the channel, and leave us a 5-star rate and review. All these things played a role in the 2016, 2020 election, whatever. All this stuff is going to play a role. I mean, maybe some people don't want it to, but let's say it should play a role in this upcoming election here. We've talked about how Trump blew it on COVID multiple times here, among other things. But it seems as though he's the heir apparent, right? I mean, we got Iowa results. He dominated. He won by like 30 points or some shit.
Yep.
I think it was funny. Well, it turns out she was right, I guess. But Nikki Haley declares it as a 2-person race after she finished third.
It's like a 1.5-person race.
But then to her credit, I guess, Vivek and now Ron DeSantis have both dropped or suspended their campaigns, let's just say, because if there was ever a election cycle where a suspended campaign may actually be unsuspended, it's one where the president might be in jail. So
former president.
Yeah, sure.
And current. I don't know. That works. That checks out.
But anyway, so there's a chance, seemingly, like it's set up for it's either going to be Trump or it's going to be the establishment hack Nikki Haley if Trump goes to jail. I don't think Nikki Haley wins anything. Like, I don't think she wins South Carolina, which is her home state of, you know, that's where she was governor. People have tried to pretend that she has a chance in New Hampshire because that they think, and the only reason she has a chance is kind of backwards thinking, is that the Democrats are going to, it's an open enrollment state. So you can just enroll a Republican on the day of the primary and vote for whoever you want. And so in New Hampshire, if you don't know at home, does not have a Democrat primary, or Joe Biden did not submit his name for the primary. So there's Dean Phillips. I was about to say, isn't that Superman? But that was Dean Cain, right?
It was.
Yeah. So Dean Phillips, apparently some congressman, I think.
Okay.
Running for against Joe Biden, young guy, whatever. But
running unopposed in New Hampshire.
But we talked about this a little bit. Like, the Biden administration wanted to make South Carolina the first election for the Democrats, and New Hampshire was like, our constitution says we have to be first. So sorry. And so they're going to run their primary, and Joe Biden's going to run like fake write-in campaign. Even after, why don't you put your name on the ballot if you're going to run a fucking write-in campaign anyway?
Right.
But anyway, so the Democrat process is completely jattered and broken, so I'm not really worried about that. I think the whole process might be broken. I mean, even before DeSantis dropped out, like, Haley was like, I'm only going to debate Trump or Biden. Like, what? So, like, the whole structure of this whole American political system is crumbling right in front of us.
Yeah.
I'm thankful for it a little bit. I mean, I've talked about for years how it's, you know, before I even had a show, how corrupt it was. I mean, as somebody who would support the Libertarian Party candidate, but any third party candidate, just to get in the polls, like to get in the debates, you had to finish at least this X percent in the polls. But then guess what? They don't put you in the effing polls, so you're never going to get those. Right. So the whole system was broken. As soon as Ross Perot kind of interfered with the traditional Republican stuff,
balance of power,
they got rid of the League of Women Voters running the debates. It went straight to the debate commission, which is basically run by the Republican and the Democrat Party. It was a closed race. Like, you had to be part of one of those two clubs to be the president, or at least debate to be the president. But the whole thing's broken, and I think, thankfully so. But let's get some, I guess, immediate. I'll do some rapid fire about results of Iowa. So,
okay.
First of all, what do you think about Vivek and DeSantis dropping out and both endorsing Trump?
Inevitability.
So there's not going to be any more debates.
That which is inevitable should also be now. That's not the right word. I blanked.
I don't know. Immediate.
Damn, I'm sorry, everybody. I screwed that up.
So there's not going to be no more debates until the general, I'm assuming, until it's either Haley or Trump and Biden. Like, I don't expect any more debates.
Listen, I could see.
Not that anybody was watching those, but I don't. There's no incentive to put them out anymore, I guess, but they're done, right?
So here's what I'm not telling you this is going to happen, but the reason Trump didn't want to do a debate was threefold. All based on the idea of there was not a lot of upside. Everybody knows who Trump is, where he stands. Everybody's heard him talk all the time. But there were three things that could have gone wrong in the debates for Donald Trump. Chris Christie with personal attacks on his character and his life before being in office. Vivek Ramaswamy being just better on his feet than Trump was on many issues and could spin and turn. And Ron DeSantis being able to drill him on his COVID response. Because Ron DeSantis actually did quite well on COVID response and Trump was awful. So those were the three threats, in my opinion, of, hey, you are vulnerable here. Chris Christie, despite having zero chance for president, was running on the sole notion of just taking shots at you. So don't give him an audience. Vivek Ramaswamy is, I've never seen a politician as good on his feet as Vivek Ramaswamy is. It's unbelievable how his ability to comprehend information very quickly and then turn around and form a coherent opinion that even if you disagree with, you see how he got there and it's not insane and it's not born of ignorance. Incredible. And Ron DeSantis he was a great governor. He did very well. He's not a great candidate, but I don't think he could have been a great candidate this year because it's just not the right time for him. The one place he could have hurt Trump was COVID. That was the one thing where he's like, look, everybody came to my state. I swung this state red despite of you, and you told me I did this, but this is where you got it wrong, and he was right. What threat does Nikki Haley pose in a debate?
I mean, none other than, you know, like she's basically just started to attack him on his age and sensibilities, but, like, I mean, I think all the debates are canceled. Like, I'm not even sure.
If I was Trump, I would be like, done. Let's debate. Well, if it's just me and her,
maybe.
She is like Hillary Clinton levels of unlikable.
Oh, for sure.
Okay. And Donald Trump, this is what I mean, he just smears people in mud. And normally when you do that to a woman, like collectively as our American society, we kind of recoil at that of like, oh, don't do that. The exceptions are Hillary Clinton and now Nikki Haley. We don't care because they're so unlikable.
Can I add Debbie Wasserman Schultz to that group?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Because, she deserves to be on that list.
Oh, my God, she is the devil.
But she also is not debating anybody on the national stage at this point. So I think that would make
She's still a congressperson, just for the record.
I know she is. Of course she is. But I think that would be, if I'm Trump's team, I'm at least toying that idea out there. Now, I'm not going to do it unless she actually does gain some type of steam. But if she gets the
So maybe if she wins New Hampshire?
I don't even know if wins. If she could pull within, if Trump doesn't get
50%. Well, so right now, just for reference, it's like 54 to 36, something like that. Like she's up like 18, 19 points, Trump is.
So if Trump falls below 50%, then you might do it. Because number one, I'm not going to say there's no risk because there is some. It's a very low risk play because she's not like she thought that her my heels or ammunition was like a good comeback. Like she's not good at this. It's not her thing. And she's wildly unpopular.
I'm surprised. I mean, I don't know if you saw, like I posted, did you see the Shining meme where I posted?
Yeah.
So I mean, somebody caught traction because I got shared like 250 plus times.
Wow.
And so people were coming in from I don't know where commenting on the post, but I was surprised that there were and even some local people supporting Nikki. I was like, are you like literally supporting her? Be like, she's got my vote.
The country club Republicans like Nikki Haley.
And this guy used to be the supervisor of a local town, so
the country club Republicans, the neocons, they're still a part of the party. A lot of the neocons didn't leave just because of Trump, but they still like her. The problem is. The Republican Party, the reliable voters in the Republican Party has swelled. And they have swelled with people that are not neocons, that don't want to follow that. And on top of that, the number of neocons went down over the last few years. And all these new populist movement MAGA people came in. And it's skewing the traditional breakdown of the Republican Party.
Okay. Well, here's next. Jamie Dimon as Treasury Secretary. What do you think about that?
Well, Can he go to jail?
What about Fed chair?
Oh, God. That's probably where he's going.
I mean, he basically runs the Fed now.
He does.
But I only bring this up because Jamie Dimon praises Trump. This was at Davos World Economic Forum, by the way.
I know.
Meeting of the mind. You see Javier Milei was there?
Yes.
I'm not sure if I mean, I know he was, he says good things, but.
He's done good things.
Yeah, I guess.
I'm still not sure.
I'm unsure too. Jamie Dimon praises Trump, warns MAGA criticism could hurt Biden. So I think Jamie Dimon is a pretty well-established Democrat party donor. I don't really know if that's true, but he seriously claims to lean at least the Hillary Clinton wing of the Democrat Party. I don't think he really gives an F what party they are. He's in control of the money, so he doesn't really care. But it would seem that coming to Trump's defense would open up the door for a potential cabinet position for Mr. Dimon. You excited?
No.
No, me neither. All right.
That's not draining the swamp.
No. No. All right. What about Tucker Carlson, vice president? What do you think about that? Donald Trump Jr. says his father may tap Tucker Carlson as running mate. So let's talk VP a little bit here.
All right.
Tucker Carlson.
Sure.
Nikki Haley.
Oh, yeah, she's in the
back. Ron DeSantis.
Uh-huh.
Vivek Ramaswamy.
Sure.
Rand Paul. Sure. And Tulsi Gabbard. Give me some takes on any of those. All have been kind of like, none by official sources, I don't think.
Right.
But all have been kind of like, that's this person. I mean, could you imagine a Tulsi Kamala debate? Oh, my God. I would just shoot that into my veins if I could. love it. I mean, she basically annihilated her in like three sentences. And so can you imagine like an hour-long debate? I mean, they wouldn't even have one.
I can't imagine Kamala Harris debating anybody at this point.
Or Vivek and Kamala. Oh, my God.
That would be outstanding.
It's like, yeah, shoot it into my veins.
So I'm trying to think of what this
is. Is Kamala in that list of women that it's okay to hate on?
No, it's like kicking a child. You just don't feel good about it.
I mean, she's terrible.
I know. And she, you know, all right.
I mean, she's literally terrible. She has no qualifications to be where she's at.
Buddy, at the risk of, like, normalizing female tropes, that woman got ahead by a very specific way that is kind of frowned upon.
Was the pun intended right there?
Yeah, the head part.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that she got ahead.
Did you hear about Nikki Haley's trysts?
I did.
They're coming back. That was one of the defense. Somebody's like, at least she hasn't slept around on her wife or husband. Like, they were comparing him to Donald Trump. I'm like, I don't know about that.
Oh, don't worry. It was only when he was deployed for the army that she did it. So that's cool. Well, don't worry about it.
So give me some vice presidential hot takes. And if you have a lean, like, I don't know, do you think one of the people I named, or do you think it's somebody else, like a Les Stefanik gets kind of...
I don't think she makes any sense.
Yeah. I mean, I think she's...
Trump light. Like, she doesn't bring
anything. I think she's kind of a little establishment-y, but go ahead.
I think Rand Paul makes a lot of sense.
That would be my number one choice.
Yeah, he brings in the libertarians that are sort of on the fence.
He has street cred amongst all groups.
Yeah, I think he could...
Like, he can... I mean, other than the Hawks.
Well, yeah, no, they don't. You're not...
Yeah. The Never Nikki crowd, I mean, you know.
Sure.
That's whatever. But yeah, he's my number one choice, too.
Tucker Carlson, although interesting from that standpoint, I don't think makes any sense as a candidate.
And let's pretend that this person is probably likely, I say likely, but at least going to be the likely candidate for president for the next 8 years. So
I think Ron DeSantis does make a ton of sense because, all right, you bury the hatchet, you guys get it. Florida is solidly your state.
Do you see the Trump retired DeSanctimonious?
Yes. Thank God. It's the dumbest nickname ever. That was like my initial takeaway when I heard that he suspended his campaign was, thank God, at least now I'll stop hearing that stupid-ass nickname.
Yeah.
So I think, and he brings a certain, the country club Republicans are okay with Ron DeSantis. They'd be like, all right, well, that's a state, like what Mike Pence brought in 2016.
Yeah, I think, I agree with that take.
So I think he makes sense. I think Nikki Haley, well, the country club Republicans love her and the neocons love her.
I would not vote for Trump.
It alienates too much of the base.
Oh my God.
And the base, I don't think most of the base dislikes Ron DeSantis. I think they looked at it like you shouldn't have run against Trump. That was a disloyal move. But his record is pretty good. Like he's been steadfast in his approach. And even most of the hate was not on you're terrible and you're an awful person. It was why would you run against Trump right now? Yeah. That's disloyal. Whereas Nikki Haley, they genuinely dislike.
Yeah.
Like they dislike her. So I don't think Nikki Haley makes a lot of sense. Vivek Ramaswamy is interesting to me, but I still can't get a read on if this dude is actually a
Do you think he's under consideration?
I think he's under consideration, but I don't think he... What does he bring? Who's going to vote for you because...
So he brings... In Iowa, if you looked at young voters, it was almost even across the board, but it was the one place where Ramaswamy really thrived. Like, he was not getting anybody over the age of 50. Like, nobody. Like, it was like, you know, it's low single digits, but he was like in the 20% of... You know, 18 to 25 and 25 to 35. So he does bring it. What I think Ramaswamy brings more than maybe any of the other candidates is
youth,
exuberance with the youth, right? So, like, fair. He brings, like, could you imagine that dude at the rallies? Like, right, if he's setting up Trump at the rallies, I mean, that dude is.
Yeah, he'll kill it.
Yeah, right. He'll generate additional, like, listen, not that anybody, all these Trump supporters, they're all going out to vote for Trump. But if Vivek is the nominee, or the vice presidential candidate, I do think he brings people who are otherwise wouldn't vote for Trump or would just sit out.
Yeah.
Like, they just, not that they would vote for Biden, but they would just sit out. There is some libertarian overlap with Vivek and even RFK, where I could see one of those two, and we didn't bring up him as a vice presidential candidate, so feel free to comment on that as well. I know it's been brought up, but it seems as though he's going to start his own We the People Party, I think it was, and kind of, you know, try to get... ballot access the old-fashioned way, like the Libertarian Party has done over the last whatever 40 years. But I do think that there is a. I just don't know if Vivek would make a strong enough, like I would say, unbeatable candidate in 2028. Like, I think Rand Paul and DeSantis would almost be unbeatable in 2028.
I agree with that. I think Vivek is always going to. There's too much in his past that you're did you really have this mea culpa and you completely turned?
And maybe if he spends the next 4 years as a cabinet member and really solidifies his bona fides or whatever there, then I can get on board. And I say get on board, but I could be more comfortable thinking that the outcome would be beneficial for a Vivek reign, if you will.
So I think that VP picks ultimately is they're much more risk than reward. Most people who are voting for Trump are voting for Trump regardless of who he picks as VP, as long as it's not Nikki Haley. So whether he picks DeSantis, like for you, I'll take you. You've never voted for Trump before. You're close to it this time. That decision is ultimately not going to hinge on the fact if it's Rand Paul, Ron DeSantis, Vivek Ramaswamy, any one of those, and you're probably still in the exact same place you are. Rand Paul might bump you up a little bit.
Yeah, Rand Paul would definitely solidify my vote because I would think, okay, he is set up to be the president in 2028 and 2032, and we're good.
Right.
Like, I would really love to get behind the ticket.
I think most people who are going to vote one way or the other, you're not getting a huge bump. However, let's take Rand Paul out of it. Rand Paul might make you a little bit more likely than you already are, but Ron DeSantis, Vivek Ramaswamy, or even Tucker Carlson, or Tulsi Gabbard, none of those people are going to make you go like, well, I wasn't really sure, but now I am.
They would be just one more pro in the column.
Correct. Nikki Haley is the selection.
She's broken.
Because now, so this is what I mean of there's no reason to take that risk because the neocons and the
there's no reason to take that risk unless there's video evidence of Donald Trump and 15-year-old girls with Jeffrey Epstein, and they're like, Nikki Haley's your vice president, bitch. And he's like, oh, okay.
Let's just hope he doesn't try to have her robbed and somebody botches it.
Yeah.
I mean, apparently that's a thing now amongst political parties.
You never know.
So, I guess that makes sense. But ultimately, it's going to sound terrible. I don't care. I whatever you want to do.
None of those move it for you?
Nothing is going to move this at all for me. At this point.
I don't even know if you're voting for Trump, so... Would any of those people, make it more likely? Rand Paul would, almost nail it down for me.
Yeah,
I don't care if his name shows up on the list, I'll deal with the 4 years of Trump, and then hopefully Rand Paul is still alive in 2028, and he is the president for 8 years.
I don't think...
Because then he can hand it off to a Massey or an Amash. Like, we could literally have a run where we're like, okay, we have a bunch of really good, and then maybe Vivek... You know, again, solidifies his positions, becomes a player. Like, we have a little bit of a bench on the liberty leaning Republican side kind of thing. Only if Rand Paul is the guy. So that's why he is the one that really moves the needle for me anyway. So I just don't know. It doesn't do that for you.
I mean, I guess it would go from a no to a maybe.
Okay.
Like, consider it. And same even Ron DeSantis, because I think the teaming up of Trump and DeSantis would actually be. net positive. I think that would make Trump a better candidate to have somebody like Ron DeSantis as the running mate to say when shit like COVID comes up of, wait, no, this doesn't make any sense. Like, at least in private, even if he's not going to publicly call him out, in private to be able to say, you got to stop. This is too much. I guess Nikki Haley takes me from a no to a hell no. The other ones don't really move it one way or the other for me. I
don't think Tucker's a realistic thing, honestly. It's great for it's PR. Funny. Yeah, right. So, but I mean, it would be great for him to, like, again, watch him debate Kamala. It'd be great.
I mean, Tulsi Gabbard would be another one that would be like, all right, well, you know, I would look into it more, but I don't think any of them move me to the point.
Do you think that there's a general election benefit with adding Tulsi, or do you think she's just really just pulling more Republicans, even though she's a Democrat?
Even though she's a Democrat.
A former Democrat, I guess.
So I think for her, I don't know who she brings.
I mean, she definitely brings a military aspect to the the foreign policy position, right? I'm like, I've mentioned this before. Like, I would much rather have her be Secretary of State. Like, that would be, like, perfect role for her, for me. But I could see her, she would be probably next on my list of, okay, she moves the needle towards a confirmation of that vote behind Rand Paul. Not as much as Rand Paul, but she's next on that list.
So RFK Jr. would sway me. If RFK Jr. is the VP pick, I would probably vote for Trump then.
I mean, if that's the case, then you're voting for RFK in the general.
If the general, you're
in New York, so you won't have the opportunity to do that.
I'll write him in. Like, if the election was today, yes, I would vote for Robert Kennedy. Okay. Like, that's where I'm leaning right now. I don't agree with him on every position, but I can vote for him and feel good about myself tomorrow. Like, that's where I'm at. That's subject to change. There's a lot of stuff that goes.
We got 11 months here, right. 10 months, whatever.
We have plenty of time. So I'm not saying like that's the end all be all. If it was today, yes. And part of that is I liked his stance on a lot of things, not everything. I disagree with him on some stuff. But I think the number one problem facing this country is the duopoly and the two-party system that is enforced by essentially the uniparty. Now, I think Trump is on the outside of the uniparty, and knowing that whoever I vote for is not going to win, I hope Trump wins. Genuinely, if it came down to it, Trump or Biden or Trump versus Newsom or whomever, I'd much rather see Donald Trump win.
Yeah.
But I can't keep going with the lesser of two evils anymore. Like I'm just over it. I'm done with it, and I can't keep pushing down this road any longer.
Yeah. So we'll end on this. Do you think that Trump, and we talked about this a little bit last week, I think, but do you think Trump is literally just a psyop? Like, do you think he's controlled opposition that is? The only reason why, because the only reason why I'm voting for him is because of all the shit they did to him, right?
Oh, I get that. And I told you, if he's in prison,
what if that was the play, though? Like, let's just make this dude a martyr. We'll get a bunch of people to vote for him. Okay, we got another 4 years of control.
I think that you're giving them too much credit.
They're evil SOBs, though.
They're not that smart. Like, that's the problem. Think about, literally, these are the same people.
But who are you talking about when you say they?
Hang on. These are the same people that went, well, we just shot Seth Rich. What do we want to claim it as? Botched robbery. All right, cool. Did you take his money, his wallet, anything? Like, now.
I guess that's my point. They still got away with it.
They
don't care.
Your plan is like an 8 out of 10 of the intelligence of like, all right, we're going to set him up. We're going to martyr him. We're going to get all these things going against this way. They're all going to be questionable. And in response, there's going to be a groundswell of support to get him in. Like, they don't think shit that far through. They're like, this dude screwed up. We can't let him on there. Put a bullet in his head.
I'm certain that this exact formula that you just laid out has been implemented in other countries across the world by our own intelligence. Let's prop up this guy by making him a martyr, and now he's controlled opposition.
Maybe.
You don't think Javier Milei, that's a sliver of chance?
Of course there's a sliver of chance, but I also think you need the situation to get as bad as it was in Argentina for something like that to happen. Like, life in America is still pretty good for most people, like all things considered.
Yeah, I get it.
I mean, I hate the government as much as anybody, but even I'm over here like, could be a lot worse. I have relative safety. I have relative food security. I'm not overly worried about anybody infringing on my persons. I think the government takes too much of my money by a lot and doesn't offer a lot, and I think they're utterly corrupt. But ultimately, I live a pretty nice life here, as do most people who live in America. And if we have poor people and we have everything else, but try to be poor in the Philippines. It's a very different existence than what we have in America. So I'm cognizant of the fact that as much as I think this all has to, it's not that I think it has to end. It's that I think its end is inevitable. Once you get into this level of corruption, this level of incompetence, and this level of disregard for the people over whom you have control, then history will teach us every empire falls. And that's the path we're on right now. So it's not me cheering for it or against it. It's me telling you, I think it's an inevitability at this point, because I think we've crossed the Rubicon, to bring up the Roman Empire, and now we can't pull back. So this path only ends one way, and people are not going to like the way it ends. Is that fair?
Sure. Fair. All right, well, touch grass?
Every day. Get some chickens.
It's snowing.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. Having chickens sucks when it's snowing and 8 degrees outside. Mm. It's not fun.
I can imagine that being a problem. Yeah. You just see, speaking of, we'll wrap up on this, dude. Trump, they had, you know, he had a rally last night. It was like 1 degree out, and there was like hundreds and if not thousands of people just waiting outside for the dude. It's like,
it's wild.
I know. Like, no, I mean, listen, we did that as Ron Paul people, but we were like psychos.
Sure.
And so this is like that, you know, for lack of a better term, on steroids. It's yeah. there is a tangible, like, something, I don't know,
resonance.
Maybe it's, I guess, intangible is the right word, around Trump's campaign that is, that you, it doesn't exist amongst campaigns typically.
He resonates with people on a level I've never seen.
Yeah.
Not with my own two eyes. I've heard about, like, JFK and all these other people that had this capacity. He resonates with people to a level I have never, ever seen in my entire life. And it's really impressive. And, you know, people on the other side want to make that, like, oh, he resonates with the white Christians because he's racist and they're racist and they think they're entitled to this country. Like, no, it's, I've never seen somebody able to literally look at the mass collection of people who are not rich, who the country has largely said, we don't want you involved, and said, no, that's not right. You're entitled to the same things as everybody else. And they went, yes.
And I don't think Trump really thinks this, but I hope, and I think that there is a large swath of his support that you are just using Trump, right? They're just using Trump as a bludgeon to the system. And
that's why I voted for him.
Yeah.
Nothing more than screw you guys. Yeah, like, so. You're going to put this up. And, oh, that was what I was going to say about the VP thing. Like, having the wrong VP candidate, we watched it with McCain. When he picked Sarah Palin, that was damn near the death knell of his campaign. Of there were so many better people. She brought nothing to the table. And I think ultimately largely cost him the election in 2008. Just by picking the wrong person.
Yeah. All right. Well, on that note, let's make sure everybody goes out and touch grass. We'll report back here. I don't know. This will be the last show for a few weeks because I'm heading out to the sunny Florida area.
So I know we're not going to talk about this, but it just popped into my mind that we're not going to be doing this for a couple weeks, yeah. So I should bring it now. Did you see that Sweden is telling most people to prepare for war? Like, start rationing up things, getting food, getting radios, getting batteries. Like, they just issued the entire country, like, sometime soon we're going to war.
Great.
Right?
I mean, well, get out and touch grass before that happens.
I mean, maybe stock up on a few things, apparently. Although, if it starts in Europe, it'll be a while before it comes here. So, you should have some time.
Yeah. All right. Well, keep that on your radar, folks. World War III coming to a country near you, I guess.
So. I mean, listen, Alex Jones said by February of next year, so...
Yeah, I mean, listen, everybody, like, Tucker's even be like, something's going to happen before general election day. Like, you know, he's actually literally floated the Trump assassination as, like, I think it's on the table.
I mean.
Like, I wouldn't be surprised if DraftKings has lines on it.
Buddy, if we.
I mean, I'm a little surprised.
I don't want World War III, no. Generally speaking. So I'm hoping that is not a quarter I have to throw into the Alex Jones was right jar. I'd like to keep that one in my pocket.
Yeah, you and me both.
So let's see where we end up here.
All right, folks. On that note. I don't know when next episode 153 will be, but it will be here.
It's coming.
It will come. And I don't know. Like I said, I can figure out some way to make a show happen long term. I did buy a service, and we haven't used it yet, so maybe I'd have to kind of experiment with you long term and see if we can make that happen. But and maybe it'll just be a chopped up version of us just talking about some things. But let me see when I get down to Florida and what my setup is like and what I have available to me. So
tell the governor I said hello.
Will do. If I run into him. So
you guys probably run in the same.
I'm service. Just hoping I run into Wemby. Did I tell you my dilemma? No. So if you guys don't know, Victor Wembanyama, Wemby, the 7'5", 7'6" dude who's, right. You know, shoots running one-handed three-pointers from like 27.
The NBA by storm.
It's crazy. I mean, it's he's a freak. Like, I mean, he's still young and he makes mistakes and all that is true, whatever. But you can just see where like, okay. Like, this is going to be a problem for, like, even the best players in the league are like, this dude is a, like, LeBron was like, dude's an alien. So, anyway, he's playing back-to-back games in Orlando and Miami, then Orlando. And right now, it is stated that he will not play back-to-back. So you'll only play one of the two for health rest reasons. If you don't know, the San Antonio Spurs are terrible, so they're basically making sure that they don't ruin their guy. Most injuries happen in the NBA because of fatigue, and you know, back-to-back games are very stressed on the NBA players. So they almost it's not unheard of where young or injured or old players don't play on back-to-backs. But anyway, so now I have to figure out which game he's going to play in. I'm leaning towards Miami because of the way the schedule falls out. I'm not getting any details there, but I'm going to have to figure this out like on the fly. So
good luck.
Yeah. But it would be fun to watch him. I just hope I can. If I go there and he's not there, it's going to literally suck.
I love that that was the end conclusion of all of that. Like, yeah. I mean, this. It'd be fun to watch him. Like,
it would be fun.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
You're coming through today.
I know.
I love you.
All right, folks. Till we meet again, hopefully not full 6 weeks away here, but it might be. So on that note, we'll see you all again. Episode 152 of Sports Clicks and Politics.